Mike and Leanna gather playing some games. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Leanna gather playing some games. But I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B.
Everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B for episode 2 of Survivor Edge of Extinction. My name is Mike Bloom, back to talk about more Survivor 38 with a panel of lions and baboons and tigers. Leanna has really opened up the Pandora's zoo cage, as it were, to let these animal comparisons out. Leanna, what havoc have you wrought onto the RHAP community at large?
I don't know, but I definitely know that there were a bunch of loose in this episode, and I can't wait to talk all about it.
Yeah, you really were like ahead of the curve when it comes to it. Or Jeff Probst was somehow able to, I don't know, have a premonition, woke from a sleep one night in the sweats, called up John Kierhofer and said, sew up those snakes, I have an idea. But of course, to talk through everything snake, of course, when we have one of the only handful of episodes in Survivor history to end on a to be continued, it's only proper that we bring in someone who's at this point quite the expert on unfinished episodes of reality television, specifically her coverage of The Challenge, X on the Beach, Are You the One, basically everything MTV for reality TV wrap ups. Allie Lasher, welcome back to the B&B. How you doing?
There's nothing that makes me reevaluate my life and my choices like an intro like that. But I'm so happy to be here. I love coming here. You know, I was noticeably not invited back to the B&B last season. I don't know if I left a mess in my baboon cage.
You moved on up to the east side temporarily. You were with Rob on the feedback show. So we're like, okay, all right.
Temporarily is the operative word there. No, I'm so happy to be back. I love being able to do this. I was listening to the last two B&Bs, which were amazing, on my flight back home. I actually traveled to get to the B&B this time. And I was just thinking, like, oh, my God, I'm such fans of Mike and Leanna, and I get to, like, also talk to them as friends on the podcast. It's, like, such a delight. But that's the last nice thing I'll say here, because the library's open. No, the library's not open. I'm just kidding. Anyway, I'm happy to be here. I'm so excited.
Did you just, like, wedge the library door open and then closed it again while all the kids were waiting outside?
Yeah, because you guys are more practiced readers than I am, so it could only be bad for me.
I read at a drag queen level, actually. That's what they told me when I took my assessment test. So, yeah, I know what I'm talking about.
I have, like, a sad straight white girl proficiency, which puts me at, like, a second grade reading level.
But you know what? Straight girls are finding idols over the course of the past two seasons. So at least when it comes to Survivor, your stock is rising.
You know what's interesting about that? Like, are we ever going to get to a point of idol parody where we don't have to, like, intro a woman finding an idol with being like, by the way, women never find idols.
This never happens.
Like, I get to even out, maybe.
I get why we have to do that now, sort of. But I'm also like, kind of like takes away from Lauren's idol find. Angelina's last season was like hilariously weird with the ladder and the help, and then she's like, oh, but I found it. But like, Lauren found the idol like exactly as anybody else would find an idol, but we still got like 10 minutes of lead up of like, women can never do this.
One of the funniest things though about that too is when I think it was Julie was talking about, you know, why don't women find idols? You know, men are finding all the idols, and then Victoria goes, okay, so we should babysit more. And I was like, oh no. No, we have to do it.
Well, Victoria, to be fair, has the total like teenage babysitter look down between the big glasses and the floppy wool hat. It seems like she's someone that your parents would invite over while they go out to the club on a Friday night.
Mike, can I ask a question that is often asked of Rob on like various like offshoot podcasts?
Yes.
Now that you're in the baby making game, who on this season are you most likely to have babysit your future child?
Well, that's a good question. First of all, the baby making game might be, it's definitely not the most awkward way I've euphemistically approached this idea of having a child, but it's definitely up there. But I would say that, oh man, of this group, I mean, Ron Clark seems like somebody who my child would either get tired out by or just get tired of. So I feel like that's a win-win situation. just because it feels like you wind him up and he just gets going for a couple of hours. And if, you know, they learn something along the way about the U.S. presidents, then that's just sort of a fringe benefit of having this man spend an evening in my household jumping on my tables.
I was going to say, that sounds super creepy. And that would be the thing that your kid learns, to jump on tables, to do wacky dances, all the things you want your kids to learn.
To be fair, my child is not necessarily going to have a great base level of normalcy as it is. So Ron Clark might be like, I don't know, a nice saltine cracker compared to whatever else I'm providing to him in his childhood.
Don't discount Angela's influence as well.
That's true. That's very true. It takes two to parent. Two must play the baby making game. It is a partner sport.
So,
how often do you play, Mike?
This is one dialogue I don't want to necessarily open. Just let's not get into the bedroom. Let's stay in the
B&B. Thank you for having me, and I will see you guys later.
Let's stay in the foyer of the B&B. Oh boy,
well, you, Allie.
I brought up babysitting
through the game of baby making. That also, I mean, like, please. Oh yes, the game. The game is afoot. Can you imagine?
Well, imagine if we have some of these players treat the game of baby making like the game of Survivor. I think it could go, you know, very pear-shaped, or it can go really well, depending on, you know, who you choose to bet amongst these Survivor players.
No.
No.
Okay, let's talk about the episode.
Yeah, let's talk about that as we make a hard line from the bedroom back into camp proper. So we're only a couple episodes in, but Allie, what are your thoughts so far on this radical change of a season?
I love it. I mean, I agree with everything that's really been said about the season so far on the various outlets, where it's like, was I excited by this idea? No. Am I excited how it's playing out? Yes. I think they've done a really good job of, maybe it's more this season than other seasons, or maybe I'm just paying more attention. Who can say? But I feel like I'm more invested in the early boots than I ever have been. And it has to be intentional, because now I'm actually excited that Keith is potentially going to go to the edge. I'm calling it the edge, by the way.
And Reed's going trendy.
It's like the house. I'm Keith, but like the Keith OG. So Keith and Reem, like, normally, I don't really care about the first or second or third boot, but I think the edit's doing a really good job of getting me invested in these characters. So I want to see them on the edge. So I don't know. It was an instantly iconic moment to see Reem wrapped up in a sheet, like devastated. And I think the aforementioned Angela Bloom had the best tweet about it, which compared it to The Little Mermaid, where she's like wearing a little thing. But I mean, that's great. Like, I'm happy to see that mix it up. Who knows how it will play out? But for the first few episodes, I'm on board.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is who knows how it's going to play out? Because I've seen some people be like, oh, yeah, you know, the twist's not that bad. And yeah, it's not that bad so far. But we haven't really seen all that much about it. I like your point, though, Allie, about the fact that the editing has to make you care a little bit more about the people who are getting voted out, because their game doesn't end there. They're going to go to the edge and they're going to chill there at least for a little bit. And so you do get to see a little bit more of them, which I think is interesting and something obviously that doesn't really happen. Because even with, you know, let's say a Redemption Island type deal, you know, they're still only there for maybe one episode, or it's like one person that steamrolls if you're Christine. So I think that's interesting wrinkle to the editing.
Yeah, I do think that one of the other benefits of having Edge of Extinction is that you don't necessarily need to dedicate a certain portion of time to the episode. Reem got what, 30 seconds at the beginning and then like 15 seconds at the end. She got the post-credit stinger. And that's about it, as opposed to Redemption Island, when you have to show the person coming there, you have to show the Redemption Island challenge take place. And that eats up a good quarter of your episode time, depending on how long the challenge runs. Here, they're able to, you know, weave it in. If there's not a lot going on in Edge of Extinction that week, take it out. If there's a big brouhaha going on between Keith and Reem, go ahead and make it the central focus. The main quibble I do have with these two episodes is I sort of wonder if we need to institute like a Bechdel test for Survivor Edge of Extinction, where it comes to when two people are in a scene and they're not talking about a returning player, that should make our ears perk up a little
bit. The Bloomtel test.
Yes, let's patent it. Let's put it out there. Just because I do feel like while maybe this idea of the twist radically changing this season might not necessarily be coming to that sort of prophecy early on, I do think the returnees are a bit of an airtime suck right now. It feels like when they're not on screen, people are talking about them. And understandably, there's a lot of story potential in there. But I do feel like it's been very, at least from a story perspective, very returnee focused in the past two episodes.
To that point, I have a question for you guys, and this should have been my discussion topic, but it's not. So I'm just going to co-opt like a returnee. I'm going to suck the time out and ask this question. If you're on the show, or you're a returner, you're Wentworth, you're Joe, whatever, do you say yes to this season? Because it's good. Like I at first last week's episode, or this week's episode, I was saying like, I don't understand why Wentworth said yes to this, because this has to be her last time, at least for a while. And like, you're just a sitting duck for everyone's attention to get you out. But to your point, they're getting all the airtime. So maybe it is the best possible situation.
I guess it also depends on kind of what your goal would be to return, you know. True. Is your goal to win, or is your goal to like hang out on Survivor and like have a great time or get airtime or whatever? I think it's really interesting because, it seems like the returning players, I think this was talked about on Know It Alls, are defined, or the newbies are defined by their relationship to the returning players.
Yeah.
And so if you are a returning player, you know, you have these newbies where it's like, okay, are they going to be against me, or are they going to be with me? And we've seen situations in the past where it's played out both ways, where being the only returning player on a tribe has been really good, or it's been really bad if you're Russell Hantz. But I think more times it's been good. So right. I feel like, okay, maybe there is an advantage to coming back and playing with mostly newbies. I don't know. Maybe I don't know if they knew that there was going to be other returning players there. You know, there'd be two per tribe. I don't know if that would change anything, but I could see the logic for why you might want to go on this season to try to win.
Which makes... Oh, sorry, Mike.
Well, I was going to say, if I'm someone who's getting a call and I was presented with two choices, a la Keith, you know, go on a season where it's partially returnees, but also newbies, or all returnees, I take the former any day of the week, because to Liana's point, there's some pretty good stats when it comes to, I know Per Diem actually just put out a video about this, about the quote unquote captain situations that have happened over the course of Survivor seasons, that it's, you're usually going to do pretty darn well, unless you're Russell, or unless your name is Russell, basically Russell Hantz or Russell Swan, you're going to make the merge. The interesting thing is, it seems like these four people are unfortunately paying the invoice for all the other successful returnees that came before them, in that this really does seem like, outside of the Zapatera tribe from Survivor Redemption Island, this seems like the first group of newbies in quite some time that are thirsting for blood from these four returning players. I know some of them are sort of taking the lead strategy of, I'm going to suck them dry of everything they know and then vote them off. But I mean, considering we have talk in episode two of getting rid of Kelly Wentworth, I feel like that's atypical when it comes to this type of captain situation.
I think it also comes down to like what level of threat you think you would be in an all returning season, like Joe Anglim, right? Like this is probably a better spot for him than an all returning season where people like Fishback are going to be gunning for him, or even more so this time around. But like somebody like Wentworth, I don't know. Like it seems like they're holding her out to be like the strategist we all know her to be. But I feel like she could still get lost in an all returning season in a good way. But maybe I'm undervaluing what returners think of her. And it would depend on who the other women are. But I do think it like bodes better for like a Boston Rob or a Joe than it does for like David or Kelly, who might be able to otherwise dissolve into the background of a returning season. But I'm probably very much underselling what returning players would think of them.
Well, David is successfully blending in with all the newbies, apparently, because the fact that people are having discussions about like Wendy, oh, we have to get the returning players out. And then the camera pans out and David's right there. One of my favorite editing moments. So good.
But the thing is, the weird thing is that he agrees with it. He's like, yeah, oh, no, I'm totally there with it, which is just like, I don't know if he's been brainwashed, or if like he hit his head on a coconut and now believes he's a one time player. This is his first time out. But that it's crazy that he's also like, he's sort of swung along with the idea as well.
Yeah, that's his camouflage of trying to blend in. He's like, okay, if I just say that I've never played before, I'm on board with getting out the returnees. Well, I can't be a returnee because why would I be on board with getting myself out?
Are you saying the animal in him is a chameleon?
Yes, he should take the quiz. And I guarantee you, Chameleon will be the top response.
We should explain that I got baboon, and I explained that to you guys before we got on air. So like the intro of like lions and tigers and baboons, oh my, like I did get the baboon personality.
I just took this while we were, talking in the beginning of this about my sex life and other things. I got a sheep.
Whoa. Is that how that happens?
I got a sheep. And I don't know how to feel about it.
Oh, man. So a lion and a sheep host this podcast. And we have a baboon as our guest this week.
We just need to know what Brent gets. And then all the pieces will fit into place.
Brent is one of those screaming goats.
Oh, my
God. What?
Like one of the yelling goats, like from the, the Taylor Swift song. Yeah,
I'm bypassing the quiz. I'm giving my own Kim Spradlin-esque animal assignment right now.
I can see it.
Oh, boy. Well, let's move on here from our Dr. Doolittle shenanigans and get into some of our more tried and true measures of this episode.
Wait, I'm sorry. I just love the fact that Allie explained something that happened like 15 minutes ago. And I was like, I just need everybody to know this. And then I was like, okay, we're done.
We're not for explanation here on the B&B. We're more so for throwing things out there and letting the people sort of chew on it and digest it and see where it takes them.
Yes, much like a baboon.
I didn't see that on the menu, on the advantage menu.
Are baboons omnivores? No, they're herbivores. No, well, whatever. Who cares? This isn't an animal podcast. Or is it?
It could be. We're not talking about the war dog this week, unfortunately. But we are talking about this week's boot, Keith. Surprisingly blindsided, as was said many, many times over the course of that tribal council. So we're going to read off our preseason predictions, at least how we thought he would do before he got voted out. It's to be seen whether or not, he goes to Extinction Island, which P.S. Before we go into Keith, I mean, he's going to Extinction, right?
Yeah, I mean, he has to.
I would like to ask Keith that in an interview setting.
Oh, perhaps we might have that opportunity. I personally believe that if he was going to quit, that would have been a much stronger ending, right? Like if you had the footage of him quitting the game, why would you not make that the end of the episode? Why would you instead make it a cliffhanger? So I feel like they had to build some tension into it there somewhere, since they knew he was going to Extinction, so they put in that cliffhanger.
Well, the other thing too is if every single episode ends with the person going to the island, which I assume it will, because, who's not going to go? That's going to get really boring and really repetitive, because it's like, oh, yep, all right, they're going to the island. Yep, they're going to the island. So to have something a little different, I think, is also maybe why they did it.
It's like Rob said, though, like they don't provide enough of an explanation. So it's sort of like to have a chance to get back in the game, go left. It's not like to starve and maybe die and see how long you can outlive everybody else. Like this is an unprecedented thing in Survivor. So for a Survivor fan, which Keith is, like, make a left. Maybe you're playing Redemption Island. Like, you don't know. So of course he's going to go left. If they gave you like the full, the fine print, maybe then somebody would back out. Probably not, but at least like go see what it is.
Yeah, for sure.
So Liana, how did you feel Keith was going to do preseason upon checking out all the interviews he gave before Edge of Extinction kicked off?
Oh, man, I'm really kicking myself for this one. But I'll just read it. All right, I had Keith making the merge. Poor sweet baby Keith. Honestly, it was a miracle he made it this far and wasn't eaten up by the other players sooner. This is going to make any sense. Kelly and Aubrey were worried that the other women in the Praying Mantis Alliance would try to pull in sweet baby Keith.
Wait, did the Alliance take the quiz?
Yeah. Praying Mantis is, they eat men. Would try to pull in sweet baby Keith to make a move against the remaining vets. Keith accepts his fate in the game and takes the vote out pretty well. He didn't really do much during the season, but he became a meme due to his lack of airtime.
Oh, so you predicted he would go the Chelsea route.
I did, yes.
Well, you were much more optimistic about Keith than I was. I had Keith going pre-merge. I did say he'd become the closest to the returnees on his tribe, but I said he gets targeted for his slight frame, and this time there's no Stephanie Johnson to talk up how he can fit in things. And I said he'll publish a poem either on the show or on social media about his time out on the island, which I guess is yet to be determined. But I did notice he put out a YouTube video about one of his poems in the past couple of weeks.
Oh, okay. I didn't even know he wrote poems. But
yeah, I think that was one of his like big hobbies that he likes to partake in.
Do I get to judge these?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I once again took notes, as I did the last time I was here. And here's my, like, you guys gave me a tough one. I know it's like the pre-merge post-merge, so Mr. Bloom thinks that he's going to win this. But I feel like, Mike, you took things that we know about him. Like, he has a slight frame. You saw that. I agree. That's true. And that he's a poet. Okay. That's true. Liana, while she didn't get the merge right, I still think it applies that it's a miracle he made it this far. I think calling him Sweet Baby Keith is accurate. And he did get pulled in to try to get the vets out in the Wentworth vote. So I'm sort of like, all the description was right on Liana's, but Mike's result was right. So I think the tipping point is going to take me to Liana, only because I thought you were dead on in your superlative assessment of Keith when you gave him most likely to flip. And that's exactly what he did in the first episode. I was like, I think everything you were saying on the podcast about him and your preview ended up being right. So I'm going to add additional credit to break the tie.
Yes. Extra credit. I'll take it.
Oh,
is
man.
That one of Ron's rules?
Always give extra, give extra credit when someone calls them poor, sweet baby Keith.
Yeah, you got to butter up people in order to get extra credit. I shouldn't have brought somebody in who was currently like in school, because I knew that they were going to judge us by such a harsh rubric instead of like, you said pre-merge, I'm going to give it to you.
I'm the millennial judge. This is my first verdict, my first official verdict.
I think you're very fair, and I support your.
I think it's only we should only do as nature intended and have the lion eat the sheep.
Who's the booker here? Is it Mike? Because then Mike won. Like, who's in charge of inviting me back?
No, obviously, it's me. So, all right. Write Allie down for next season. Got it.
Okay. Well, Allie, I know you said that we've touched upon a number of discussion topics even before getting to your tried and true one that you brought to the table. But what do you have to talk about for this season or Survivor at large?
That very much felt like the Jada Pinkett Smith Facebook show, The Red Table Talk. So you're like, coming to the table, that's what they say. Anyway, watch it, it's great. Okay, this is like a little bit more serious for me, but since I am able to jump on the line with Liana and Mike, and I want to bring this up. I tweeted about this and did not get any engagement with it besides like somebody like mansplaining to me my mistakes. I don't know, whatever. No, anyway, that didn't happen. Seemingly, Aubrey and David were cast as the same, like, quote-unquote type, right? Like, the weaker but smart strategic player. And this isn't necessarily what I agree with, right? But this has to be, like, their archetype. And seemingly, Kelly and Joe were cast as the same type, like, the brawny, physical, like, person. Why are both women, despite their differing, like, archetypes, seemingly being the bigger targets on both tribes? Is it like the makeup of the tribe is just like unfortunate for them? Is it gender involved and women will always be seen as like weak or harder to get along with in the early game? And as I said on Twitter, riddle me that, Mike and Liana.
Well, I think in terms, first of all, for Joe and Aubrey, I think that, you know, Joe is perceived, or he's not perceived as a strategic player. So, and he's stronger. And so it sort of goes to, in the early game of Survivor, you want to try to keep challenge strength. And I think that Aubrey isn't seen as a physical asset to the tribe. And that's what, you know, for better or for worse, that's what people seem to value in the early goings of Survivor. And the fact that she's also known to be a strategist, that is, I mean, then that's, you know, that's why also on top of it, she's being targeted. On the flip side, the Kelly David thing is really interesting, especially this whole fact that like David is apparently not a returning player. Like, that's what I keep going on, because he is not the strongest in challenges. I have seen many a montage of him trying to get that ball on that floating like platform. And
listen, that looks like Michael Phelps compared to what Keith's been doing. So.
That's true. Well, yeah. Poor sweet baby Keith. So like, that's what's most interesting to me, is the fact that you're not going to keep Kelly or like, you know, Kelly's the one who's going to be targeted, but David is not. Whereas he comes off, you know, he, and the perception of him is that he is more strategic. So I can't necessarily explain that one.
I think that on that note, there also might be something gendered when it comes to making relationships. Because I'm looking particularly at the Aubrey versus David thing, and at least the edit this episode made Aubrey socializing come across as very hollow. It did not stay, and that we really see the exact same conversation that Aubrey's having with three different people to show how she's essentially going through her index cards of things to say in order to get someone on your side. And I feel like there have been players who've been able to do that before, and it's been shown as a highlight. In this particular instance, it's been shown as a negative. And maybe that's because they're trying to just build out the story of this is why Aubrey gets targeted early on, is because nobody trusts her because she gives everyone the same spiel. But I do think it's interesting that maybe if another contestant, maybe if someone like Wendell had been doing the same type of strategy, that could be lauded. Whereas here it's portrayed as, oh, Aubrey's, you know, giving the exact same pitch to everybody. That's not good.
Which, as you said, like, how much of that is the result? Is it that it's not working on Victoria and Julia, et cetera, that it's, you know, like, I think this has been talked about, but when you watch it in, like, a jump cut, it looks obviously terrible. But if somebody's, like, it's almost like she's damned if she does, she's damned if she doesn't. Like, she's trying to make these connections. If somebody were receptive to working with her, it would probably work. Yes, if somebody checks your story on making all of these deals, you get screwed. And I think, like, the perception, the edit of the show is because, like, it didn't work on Julia and Victoria for whatever reason. Maybe it's because they already decided they don't want to work with Aubrey, which it kind of seemed to me like that. Or maybe it's because as a result of her shifty deal making. But I just think it's interesting that the same archetypes of different genders are having, like, different roads on the show. Like, what Liana, what you're saying makes a lot of sense to me, that, like, yes, of course, Joe would stick around as, like, the meat shield and the strength on the tribe, whereas you would target the more strategic player early on. But then, like, what, as we've talked about, like, why doesn't that happen on the flip side? Well, maybe it's Aubrey sinking her own ship.
Well, I also wonder if it has something to do with the fact of which tribe is going to tribal council, because Aubrey right. clearly is getting a little antsy. But if Manu had been going to tribal council, you know, it's entirely possible that we could have seen, you know, her, like, all the newbies are scared. They're going to tribal. They don't know what's going on. Oh, here's someone who wants to work with me, who says that I remind me of them. I'm scared. And then she becomes, like, a better option because she's actually reaching out to you. And then on the flip side, you could see David being targeted, because the only reason why Kelly really gets targeted is because of, you know, one, they have to go to tribal, but also because of Wendy really trying to, like, make something happen when Reem, her ally, was voted out. So if they are not having to go, then maybe David's the one who's getting nervous and trying to make connections, and then they start to target him. Whereas Kelly's like, hey, I'm Kelly, I'm hanging out. And, you know, she's seen as an asset to the tribe. So I wonder if that also could play a role in how the players are being treated.
It is interesting also to see who's targeting whom. So, like, Eric, like, the stronger men on Kelly's tribe are going for Kelly, whereas, like, the Victoria and Julia, like, women are targeting Aubrey. So maybe it is that people are just going after who they're most, like, threatened by based on their own skill set.
Yeah, and I guess it also depends on, like, who they're hovering around as well. Because, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It really does seem like everyone on the Manu tribe, with the exception of Lauren, wants to get rid of Kelly Wentworth. But it's just a matter of timing. And that's so interesting. And maybe it speaks towards how meta Survivor has gotten as well, where I think people, especially this cast, is full of a group of at least pretty cogent fans that they're all mapping out, okay, here's when the switch is probably going to happen. Here's when the merge is probably going to happen. That I feel like they've probably pinpointed a time that is the perfect opportunity to get rid of someone like Kelly. But I just find it interesting that I think the War Dog laid out a great argument here to Chris, as much as it stymied this idea of a Wentworth blindside, of him basically saying, like, we all want to get rid of her eventually. She's not going to slip through the cracks again. Let's make sure our shot is taken at Keith this time. She is firmly in our crosshairs for the rest of the season.
Well, and isn't that probably the same logic that's being used about Joe, right? Okay, right. Yeah, he's a threat. He's not going to be able to make it past a certain point, but we need him right now, you know, or we need him as a shield right now. So I guess, you know, now I can start to see some parallels if we say that Kelly and Joe, let's say, are the same archetype and David and Aubrey are. Maybe there is, and maybe it just has to do with which tribe is going to tribal. I don't know.
I do love, by the way, there was so much great stuff about the comma kumbaya stuff, but I just love Aubrey's, like, cut to her saying, I hate this kumbaya shit, basically, and saying, like, I love to go to tribal council first, because I think it was Steven who said it before, that there is strategic advantage of going to tribal council first. Yes, you're eliminating a member of your tribe, but at the same time, you're able to turn to someone and say, you voted with me, therefore I know I can trust you. Right now, everyone's just sort of circling each other standoff style in the Kama tribe, where no one really knows where anyone stands. They know that, you know, who's a good dancer, and they know who's good at eating celery, but I don't think they necessarily know who's going to be with who until the votes come in.
Which, I have to jump in on the celery point. Yeah. Again, I tweeted this, but, like, I was always told, and maybe it's because I'm, like, a hashtag woman, but that, like, celery burns more calories eating it than it gives you. So, like, isn't that the absolute worst thing to eat on Survivor? Or am I just been, like, lied to by, like, Cosmo magazine?
Okay, first of all, I'm so happy that we're talking about this, because I also had celery in my notes, because for some reason it stood out to me. I don't know if that's true. I think it is, though, because essentially what happens is, you know, it takes energy to digest the food that you eat. And so most of the time, the food that you're digesting gives you more energy than it would take to just simply digest the food. But I think for celery, you expend more energy simply digesting. So yes, it would be a terrible food to eat on Survivor.
Tell that so to Kimmy Kappenberg.
Yeah. Are you saying that Jeff should not have offered a choice between spices, fishing gear, or a nice crudité platter?
yes, we have celery and kale and all the foods that people want.
I want to again offer a clarification that that was not like a read on Kimmy Kappenberg, for anyone who hasn't listened to that podcast, that like she was talking about foods that are bad on Survivor. Okay, it was not like a tell Kimmy.
That was super useful. I bought bananas then like a couple days later and was like, oh man, I can't bruise them.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know if you saw it in one of the Manu scenes. There are flies already over that marooning food.
See?
The shelf life, like they, Reem should have like, I don't know, smuggled a bunch of pineapples away or something. Obviously did not know she'd be edging anytime soon. But, you know, I feel like there was so much that was going to spoil very quickly. I feel like that's a good representation of the Manu tribe. Just, they started off pretty strong, but they're just rotting away extremely quickly.
What a night. Still a great night.
Well, let's move in here to our first game of the podcast. It's called Survivor Edge of Extinction by the Numbers. So as we talked about a bit with the Aubrey scene in terms of her making relationships, there was a lot of repetition in this episode. There was a lot of repetition in episode 2 of Survivor Edge of Extinction.
Wait, what was there?
A lot of repetition. Okay. So I figured what I would do is, as I watched the episode, I took down a few numbers of things that happened multiple times over the course of episode 2. Here's how it's going to work. I'm going to ask you both a question, the answer to which is a number. You are each going to write down a number. We'll use the honor system here. So hopefully,
wait, can I go get a post-it note?
Go get a post-it note.
Be right back.
As Ellie gets a post-it note, I'll explain this to Liana and the audience at home. So I'm going to give a question, the answer to which is a number. You're each going to write down that number on our system. So hopefully don't you know, change your number once you see. No cheating. Johnny Fairplay would not like that. Keep the partitions up. And then when I reveal the number, however much you're off by, I'll add that to your score. And the person who has the lowest score at the end of the game ends up winning here. So you want to make sure your guesses are the closest to what the actual number is.
Now, is it without going over? I did run to get paper while you explained the rules, which was not smart.
That's okay. Fine. It'll be a surprise at the end for you then how people win. Just I'll read the question. You write down what you think the number is. That's all there is to it.
All right. I'm so glad we opened up this dialogue.
I really feel myself in you. all right, let's. Oh boy, I should not have said that. This is what happens when we get into lurid topics to start the podcast.
I didn't enjoy that, just for the record.
See, this is why Aubrey's getting targeted. All right, so first question here, you're each going to write down a number. So we saw Ron Clark hitting up the dance floor here on Kama. So if I count a dance move as one beat of movement, how many dance moves did we see Ron Clark perform in this episode? So you're each going to write down a number. Let me know when you've locked it in. How many dance moves did Ron Clark perform in this episode?
Liana, I need a number. I'm just trying to do my Julie impression. I need a number. Okay, I'm locked in.
All right, I have a number. Okay, yep.
Liana, what did you say?
15.
Okay. Allie?
I went conservative. I said 5.
Well, it was 33 movements. So this game is off to a rousing start.
Oh, God.
How do I come back from this? I got to start taking.
All right, so I'm adding 18 points to Liana's and 28 points to Allie's score. Again, you want to aim low here. Let's see if we can move on, dance our way into the next question here. You mentioned the Aubrey stuff beforehand. How many times did Aubrey say the word dialogue?
Okay, I'm locked in.
I'm locked in.
What do you think, Allie?
I said 12.
Okay, Liana?
I said 4.
Liana is the closest. Aubrey only said it 3 times.
No.
Yeah, it was only in those conversations that she had with, I believe it was Victoria, Julia, and Gavin.
Okay, I was going to say 10, but whatever.
Yeah,
it wouldn't have mattered.
Let's cut.
See, this is unfair because you guys do a close watching because you're doing a podcast. I have, like, you know, people over. There may or may not be some wine happening. So I wasn't doing that close to watching.
You should have invited Rain Man over, Allie.
Damn it. Okay.
All right. For your next watch party.
Yes, please invite Rain Man to your next watch party. All right, next.
I'm a baboon. I'm neither handsome nor plain. I'm coming up short here.
Yeah, plus counting, like, numbers aren't really your thing, right? You only care about stuff if it's creative, I think.
Yeah, I think that was right.
Yeah.
All right, let's go idol hunting here.
You're getting a bad review on the B&B.
Oh, boy.
It's Mike's fault.
So we talked about before Lauren finding the hidden immunity idol, which only took less than 2 minutes, the entire segment. But in that segment, how many times does she say the word idol or idols?
Goddamn. Just Lauren.
Just Lauren.
I mean, I have no idea. Who could know this? Okay. Okay. Maybe the one. I'm not locked. I'm just giving up. All right. I'm locked. Whatever. I'm making it up.
All right. Liana, what'd you say?
I said 10.
Okay. Allie?
I said 6, and I'm going to go home.
Please don't go home. We'd love to have you stay. You were both in the range. The correct answer was 9. Lauren really crammed in the idol references, saying 9 times during her search.
Man, could have been 6-9. If only I had gone.
I mean, Allie did say 6, so yeah.
I know. If only I had said 9.
So she's the true winner. Let's end the game right here.
bonus points for Allie.
Oh, I don't want to be. I don't need to be pandered to, lion and sheep. I hold my own.
Yeah, that's right. Because you're quick-witted and amusing.
We're like, what the hell is happening? I love the
Yeah, just to be fair, this is not us just dressing down Allie's personality types. This is all from the baboon analysis on whatanimalareyou.com.
Wait, did you have more? Or are you just stopping it because I was being a poor sport? I was throwing my feces. Don't stop it on my account. I just think it's fun to, like, be upset when you're losing.
All right, we're gonna keep going with this then. So prior to Lauren actually finding the idol, we spent a little less than 2.5 minutes at Kama as they search for the idol. How many times in that segment is the word, and Manu as well, in that portion of time, how many times is the word idol or idols said there?
Oh,
so if Lauren said idol 9 times on her own, how many times did Kama and Manu say idols?
Can we ask a question?
Sure.
Okay, how long were those segments?
Those segments, they ended up being about 2.5 minutes long combined.
All of it was about 2.5 minutes? So Lauren's segment was 2.5 minutes and this one was 2.5 minutes?
Lauren's was about a little less than 2 minutes, but yeah, pretty much balanced out. Because remember that she had to give the big Shaquilla about how much she loves Kelly Wentworth, and we had the whole sepia tone flashback.
Yeah, okay. All right, I got a number.
All right, yeah, Allie, let's toss it to you first. How many idols do you predict?
I feel like you're tricking me, so I'm going to also say 9.
All right, ooh. Liana?
I said 20.
Ooh, the correct answer was 15
ooh,
times.
Liana, you have an eye for this, an ear for it, an ear and an eye.
You have many body parts for this, Liana.
Thank you. I, in fact, have a whole body that helps me do this quiz, but thank you.
Speaking of what people exerted their bodies with during the immunity challenge. We talked about Jeff's new buzzword of snake. How many times do you think Jeff said the word snake in the immunity challenge, including when he was describing the challenge itself?
It was a lot. Okay. Well, I don't know if it was a lot. It felt like a lot.
Okay. I locked in my answer.
I have my answer as well.
All right. What do you think, Liana?
Yeah, I said 30.
All right. Allie?
I said a mere 21 times.
Allie was closer. Only 15 times. Only 15 times Jeff said snake.
But Ron did 33 dance moves. I want to recount on the Ron dance moves.
Well, it's per beat. So he had like at least 5 in just that first little.
So you're saying if he like moves his elbows up, that's 1. He moves them down, that's 2.
Listen, if you want to quibble, take it up with Paul Osselson. He was the one who wrote this quiz.
I will take it up with Paul Osselson.
Considering that Ron did a reprise at the end as well, an encore of the comma dance, I feel like that makes sense.
The 5 was low. I was clearly not watching the episode.
It's because you were dancing along with him, Allie. We know it.
I was more like, ooh, that's not a great look for Aubrey or Ron. Ooh.
Yes. So for the snake personality, this is part of the description. Without arms, wings, or flippers, they are forced to slink through life in a solitary quest for warmth and acceptance.
Wow.
That's so sad. Shy and insecure, they must keep a low profile to avoid the disapproving glances and teasings of others.
That kind of sounds like Keith.
Oh, poor sweet baby Keith.
Which is why he stayed far. I don't know if you noticed, he stayed far away from touching that snake in the immunity challenge.
Oh my god, I love when he
except when he got hit by it
without him. Okay, he climbed up the cage thing without even helping with the snake. One of my favorite moments. But my absolute favorite moment was him just like rolling in the sand next to the snake.
Like he had become the snake.
Right, exactly.
When he seeks higher ground, as you're mentioning, it's like he clearly just like couldn't be in the water anymore. But then, as if in a nightmare, the snake just clobbers him in the water. I was like very concerned for him. That is one part I did do a close watch on. I was like, he's drowning. Well, no one cared.
It does say, as a child, the snake's small frame was no defense against taunts of playground bullies.
See?
Other giant snakes, apparently.
Oh, did Mike just win the
I think I deserve some extra credit. Yeah. Figuring out what animal Keith is. I think I might do that, actually, for season 39. Hopefully we're coming back for season 39, but maybe I'll just make everyone an animal.
I think that's great. Yeah, the what animal are you personality test is really, truly what will cap off your predictions.
Well, we still have a few more numbers to go through here. So we're going to stick into the immunity challenge because even though the snake dragged Manu back, there was still some time to make up some time at the ring toss. Maybe that's another reason why Keith didn't do well is because snakes don't have arms to toss rings. But and in the immunity challenge, we saw Kama throw exactly 8 tosses to win. Joe threw 4, Eric threw 4. Between Chris and Keith, how many shots, both successful and unsuccessful, did we see Manu make in the immunity challenge during the ring toss? So we're combining both successful and unsuccessful, the number of times that the ring went out of those gentlemen's hands.
Okay, I have a number.
Oh, I want to change mine. Okay. I think mine's too high because they were at the rings later, right? I'm going to say 14, but I think that's high.
Oh, okay. I said 16. So
cool. I had 17. I changed it to 14.
You were right to trust your second instinct, Allie. They only tossed 10 times.
Okay.
I mean, they did end up getting 6, so it still was more than Kamo seemed to be like perfect throws going on. But yeah, only 10 between them, despite the big, the big to do around Keith completely biffing the rings.
But how many dance beats did they throw the rings on?
Yeah, that's one toss for every 3 beats, 3 right. Clark beats. It's a good ratio.
Oh, that's how we count time. Set the metronome, boys.
All right, next question here. How many times was the word blindside said at tribal council?
Oh, by Jeff included?
By Jeff included. Jeff and the contestants.
Oh my god, no idea. Okay, all right, sure.
I feel like I'm going to get dialogued again here.
Okay, I'm going to say 16 because I didn't want to write down another number.
Okay, Liana? Or Allie?
I said 5.
Oh, girl.
It was 13, lucky number 13 times the word blindside was said. Basically got racked up when Jeff basically just went round robin and everyone said that a blindside was coming. So that sort of just kicked
up. I forgot if he only talked to Kelly and Keith and I knew he said it and then I added two for good measure. I thought it was the dialogue thing again because I could have sworn the dialogue was said 16 times.
Well, it would, see, that was, but that was by Aubrey.
Not totally. Yeah, that would have really.
So you just got blindsided, Paul, by that question.
I'm going to call Paul.
All right. So to finish things off. So Keith says either dang or dang it 5 times upon leaving tribal council.
That's it. I would have said 60.
I'd say it. But how many times does he say either God or Jesus? As in, oh God, or God, or come on God, or come on Jesus, as he's faced with the edge of extinction.
Sorry, I got a.
I know it sounds like he's at the track, and there's two horses named God and Jesus that he put all his money on.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Yeah, I'm gonna say. Are you locked in, Liana?
Yeah, I'm locked in.
I'm gonna say 10.
Oh, okay. I only said 5.
Allie was very close, 11 times.
Ooh.
Man, I thought he said dang more than that. So I was like, it's a trick question.
Now, can I ask a question? Was he doing the Davy, like asking the Lord to send a sign via the fire, like which way the fire blows?
I believe so, because I'm pretty sure I think he said, I did take such studious notes about his preseason that apparently I just copied them into my predictions, according to Allie. But I believe he did say something along the lines of, like, his faith will guide him in the decision he makes. So I feel like, faced with a literal fork in the road like this, he would turn to a higher power.
Yeah. I wonder if the fire will point him in the right direction. Although, to be fair, the torch is already on the other side.
Yeah, I was going to say, fire is sort of biased already. Well, congratulations. It actually turned out to be a bit closer in the back half there. But Liana, you were able to edge out Allie and take the victory here in Survivor Episode 2 by the numbers.
Now, could someone guess, Liana, guess how many points you beat me by? Let's guess the margin.
That's right. Okay, let's see. I had a lead of 10 at the beginning, and then I totally lost count. So I'm going to say I beat you by 15.
I had 20.
Liana was the more conservative choice. It was correct. You started with a 10-point gap. You ended with a 10-point gap. Very full circle.
Wow. So we didn't even have to do that.
Edged all over
the
challenge.
That's the subtitle of the B&B. We didn't have to do that.
We didn't have to do that. Yeah, that's about right.
Then how would we listen to the great theme song? You guys do have the greatest theme song in all of RJP.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I find myself humming it quite frequently.
Will from America.
Yeah.
Well, they're all Will from America, right? So then it's just grading him against himself. Besides, I guess, know-it-alls. But I think you guys edge them out. No offense to the neon plastic trees.
Yeah, you're going to edge know-it-alls theme. We survived.
It's the edge. It's the edge.
Oh, so I can't. Is it like the Facebook?
We're going to edge.
Yeah, well, it's like the war dog, right?
Or the house.
Okay, we have to go to. Oh, I see. So it's a noun, edge. The edge.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay. All right. Well, we're not doing Mad Libs this week, so don't worry. All right. Let's go on. I want to talk about my question, and I want to bring back something that we did in our first episode, which was the Ron Clark rule of the week. So we are going to set a rule for every episode, and we'll have 69 rules by the end. So rule number 56. So Ron Clark has 155 rules. We came up with rule 56 last week, and Josh Wiggler helped us.
Wait, 155?
No, just 55. 1 through 55. Numbers are hard. Okay, Mike, you got me.
I don't know. I just threw a bunch of numbers at you for the past like 20 minutes. So I understand if you're a bit jumbled.
Like 15, 4, 30, you know. So, okay, here we are. We have rule number 56, which is ream daily. So what is going to be rule number 57? What did we learn from this episode? So I have a couple of suggestions, but I'm very much open. So one is, if you hate Kumbaya Survivor, be sure to play along. Or even if you hate Kumbaya Survivor, be sure to play along. Dance before challenges, or speak softly and carry a big snake. Which is also my Chris Underwood rule number 69, based on that gift that's going around. So anyway, what do we think should be the Ron Clark rule of the week?
Oh boy. Well, I do want to speak about that Chris Underwood gift, because I mean, not since Dr. Marcus has there been such prominent peen on the screen.
Was the rhyme intentional? Was that part of Keith's poem?
That's Keith's poem. It's called, it's called Screen Peen. It's coming soon to YouTube, YouTube Red. So I'm going to do a takeoff on the dance rule that you came up with. How about dance like the other tribes watching?
I like that one. I don't really know if that's what we learned from this episode, but I still like it.
I have something similar, a similar twist on what you just said, Mike, which is dance like a modest yet strong for network reality television segment of the population is tuning in.
I like that one. It might be a little wordy, if I'm being honest there, but I think that it really goes with Reem Daily as our first rule. And then our second rule is, what was it? Dance like moderate.
I from the options given, I liked your third option.
The speak softly and carry a big snake.
I like that one too.
You don't carry the snake.
Okay. All right. So is it dance like the other tribe's watching, or dance like the other tribe isn't watching? Aren't you supposed to dance like no one's watching?
Yeah, but if the other tribe is watching, you want to celebrate, right? And that's why he came up with this weird booty shaken victory dance that ends up not coming to fruition. Maybe it's because they were so exhausted by the end of that challenge.
Also, I feel like pre-merge, that's the wrong thing to do, is like the, you know, the Tony Vlachos over celebration.
Well, how about this? To Allie's, to maybe shorten Allie's point that she made beforehand, dance like the casuals are watching.
Okay, so we have either dance like the casuals are watching, or speak softly and carry a big snake, are sort of the two suggestions. I'm going to have a strong preference either way.
I feel like we've workshopped so much of the dance one that now I don't want to kill it off.
Okay.
I'm not loyal to it. I like the big snake, so I think it should go to you, Liana, right? This is your topic.
That's true. Okay. You know what? I think we also learned something from David Wright about speaking softly and carrying a big snake. The fact that he, you know, was willing to listen to Wendy, didn't really speak out. He, for some reason, is still not a target, which I don't quite understand. And I think part of that has to do with the fact that he speaks softly. So I'm going to go with that one for rule number 57. Speak softly and carry a big snake.
And somewhere, Bryce Isaiah, out of nowhere, just screamed yes at the top of his lungs for no particular reason.
Yeah.
No reason at all.
No reason. It's just a premonition. Okay. Cool. Awesome. I'm excited. This is going to be a great list of rules by the end of the season.
Yeah. Considering that this is 56, I can't imagine what 69 is going to be in terms of just pure sexuality.
Well, you know, I blame Allie for that one again at the start of the podcast. It's really hard to get me off that track once we get me there. So, all right, let's move on and let's get to our next activity. So I was inspired by all of the idol hunting that was done this episode. So I wrote a choose your own adventure book that we are going to play through, and it's titled Idol Search Party.
Oh, I know this one. I want to bury my dad.
And which cereal would you like to eat before?
Oh, I would like to eat the Frosted Flakes as I chop up my father and put him in the bathtub.
Okay, spoiler alert. Thank you, Mike, talking about the Black Mirror episode Bandersnatch. So Choose Your Own Adventure books are so much fun. I read them a lot as a kid, where essentially you read the story. There are a number of different outcomes, and you get to be an active participant in the story. So that's how it's going to work. The two of you are going to be active participants in the story. You're going to have to come to a consensus about what you want to do. But then we will play through your Choose Your Own Adventure and find out what happens to you during the idol search party.
Okay, so Allie and I are functioning as one person here?
Yes, you are. So you're going to have to come to consensus decisions.
Walk a mile in my moccasins, Mike Bloom. Here we go.
Okay.
You guys, the games are next level this season.
This one is intense. I have a diagram of all of the options of things that happen. I spent too much time on this. Okay, so let's do it anyway. Welcome to Survivor. You are competing on Season 38, Edge of Extinction, and are on the Manu tribe. Reem was voted out last night, and you're back at camp with your tribe mates. Big Wendy is on the outs, so Kelly Wentworth suggests idol hunting as a group to prevent Wendy from finding the idol. How do you respond? A, that's a good idea. Idol hunting as a group totally makes sense. Or B, no way Wendy's going to find the idol. Plus, I still need to get my clothes that Reem left out on the beach.
This feels like the Survivor computer game that I used to play.
Yes. Which one did you play? Was it the Australian Outback?
Yes,
one?
I played the Australian Outback one.
Oh my God, I love that. Because they had like Camp Life where you spent like 5 minutes just running around getting water from a river.
It was true, like old school Survivor to a T. And I was obsessed with Colby Donaldson, so I was always Jerry, even though I think I misunderstood.
I don't know if you were Jerry or like the faceless sim.
Yeah, I don't think you could pick a player.
Jerry,
yeah.
Nandy.
But could you pick a player, or was I like on the tribe with them as a random person?
I think you could pick a person, but again, like they all look completely. The worst is my wife got me the Wii.
My wife got me the
Wii game of Survivor for my birthday a few years back. And
what?
And it has names like Tom and Rupert and Colby. But they look nothing like it. It's like they gave these names to the concept artists and said, "Draw what do you think a person named Tom would look like?" And
when can I come over and play this? Like, I want to play this so bad.
Oh, it's horrible. It's even
yes.
Instead of spending 5 minutes at the river, you spend 5 minutes furiously paddling your Wiimotes to get your raft down a river.
Liana, see how Mike was just like, I don't want to hang out with you, so I'm going to say this amazing game is terrible.
No, you come over anytime and we are playing this. And I will see if I can get the second game as well, the one that has all the weird Flash games on it. We can have a whole Survivor game, Survivor LAN party.
This is incredible.
Is this new, or is this something that was just repurposed for the Wii?
I had no idea this existed.
This came out in like 2010, I think.
Oh, man. All right. I got some shit to buy on eBay.
All right.
Well, I didn't code any game for y'all to play. Instead, I wrote a shitty little story and y'all are going to play it. Okay? So make a choice.
Mike, what's your gut instinct? I have a gut instinct, but
what's yours? Here's the thing. Knowing us, we would say A, but we would say A sarcastically.
No, see, I 100% went with B. But yeah, but even Liana wrote it sarcastically, which makes it tempting, right? Because she's
great.
I couldn't help it.
But even honestly, and this is so bad, but as I was watching the episode, I was like, isn't this what we just got hit over the head with, that women don't find idols? Like, why are we now suddenly worried that Wendy's going to suddenly come up with an idol? I don't believe that, but I'm just saying the show forced it down my throat. What do you want to say, Mike? I'll leave it to you.
I mean, B would be good because I feel like our treasure and moccasins have been left by the wayside by Reem. They might have been washed out to shore, a la Jacob Derwin. But I don't want to alienate ourselves from the group too much. Should we just go with A and see where it takes us?
Here's my last proposal for B, although I know for the sake of time, I should have been like, yeah, let's do it. My last thing for B is like, I kind of want to do what didn't happen on the show so that we see more of what Liana made up.
That's true. You know what? Let's make sure we expose Liana's prolific narrative writing. Let's lock B in.
Oh, God. Okay. All right. So we're going with B. So there's a bunch of these written. Okay. Kelly looks at you suspiciously while munching on celery, but agrees with your point. After the group conversation, you turn to walk towards the beach to grab your sandy, albeit dry, clothes. As you're picking up the clothes, you think to yourself, maybe I should go find the idol for myself. Do you, A, turn towards the jungle to go find the idol, or B, decide to not make waves and keep collecting the clothes?
Mike, I think if you make this decision, we'll find the idol.
I feel like we're not going to find the idol if we just do nothing. And maybe if we pick A, we could be like, oh, I changed my mind. I want to come back and say that again as non-sarcastically as possible as Kelly suspiciously munches on her celery like a cigar. So maybe we turn back to the jungle. We have a change of heart after we picked up our clothes and decided to actually start looking for the idol on our own.
That's why men find idols. Let's go with A.
Yeah. Okay. Because, yeah. The other option, I'm just going to read the other option because it's a dead end. So let's say, for the entertainment, because I wrote this. Okay, so let's say you decide to not make waves and keep collecting the clothes. This is what would happen. As you continue picking up clothes, a big wave comes out of nowhere. The wave hits you hard and the tide is too strong. You are swept out to sea. I should have gone looking for the idol, especially considering this episode is titled Idol Search Party. You blub as the darkness of the ocean consumes you for all eternity. Your idol adventure ends here.
Mike, you just died? Saved my life. Saved my life.
Yeah, although I would have given you the option to go back, because yes, it does end in death.
Oh my god, this is amazing.
Thank god we trudge towards the jungle.
Those choose your own adventure ones are crazy. Okay, so
says the person who wrote it.
Yeah, I know.
Wow, right? This was so crazy. So,
I didn't realize the stakes were so high.
You barely escaped death. So.
Yeah, oh my god.
But good news. You turn towards the jungle to go find the idol.
But now I'm scared that, like, Final Destination style, the Grim Reaper is hanging over my head of, like, I was not meant to go into the jungle. I was meant to get swept out to the ocean.
No, it's okay. You chose that. I was just reading what would have happened otherwise. Okay. But you made the correct call. Because, go you, deciding to look for that idol, you walk into the jungle and start looking around. Suddenly, you can see Big Wendy's head sticking out over some bushes, and it looks like she might be coming to talk to you. Do you A, keep walking towards Big Wendy and let her approach you, or B, turn and walk the other direction?
I kind of want to do B just to be an asshole.
Let's do B. That was my instinct too. B it is.
I was going to go with like C, throw something at her head.
Okay, B. Talk to Wendy. Not today, Satan. You do a quick about You do a quick about face and start heading in the opposite direction to the jungle. As you keep walking, you start to hear some noises coming from the south. Do you A, focus on finding the idol, or B, investigate the noises to the south?
Hmm. Oh boy. Well, I'm scared knowing that I could die. That B would lead me to, like, I don't know, a rabid warthog. That would attack me. So I'm not sure.
What do you think, Allie?
Yeah, I wanted to go A. I feel like, Mike, we've gotten in the same set of slippers here.
Yeah, let's go with A. But I'm just curious, was B a dead end?
No, B was not a dead end.
Okay.
Okay. We can potentially explore the noises to the south at the end. Okay. So you decide to focus on finding the idol. As you walk through the jungle, you see a very odd looking tree. It has an elaborate root structure around the bottom, as well as a few tree knots that could hold an idol or two. Do you A, climb the tree to reach the tree knots, B, root your hand around the roots of the tree, or C, ignore the tree and keep walking?
There's no ladder that mysteriously appears like under some vines that I could use.
The tree is nature's ladder.
Yeah, the branches are nature's ladder.
So I feel like, as Kelly and Lauren talked about in this episode, like, usually it's only buried a few feet into the ground. So I feel like the roots are where we want to stay.
Yeah, like Jimmy Fallon, I'd like to stick with the roots.
Okay, so we are going to root hand around the tree.
A scorpion bites us and we die.
Yep.
Guys, okay. you crouch down and begin to root around the base of the tree. Your hand touches something that doesn't feel like tree bark. Could it be an idol? You grip the object, but unfortunately for you, you didn't grab an idol. You just squeezed a real-life Sunaeka slithering around the tree. It bites you, and you get medevaced for being bitten by a venomous snake. Sadly, your idol adventure ends here.
Keith, what were you doing there?
That's right, and it ended with a medevac. That was the end of your game.
Oh no!
Now, if you die, is that considered a medevac or a quit?
Yeah, you quit life.
Like in the first instance, like, we're proudly medevaced in the second instance, and we're like, no, but I would lose my hand for this game. And then the doctor comes out, and like, we're a hero, and we're Papa, right. We'll never be seen or heard from again.
Yeah,
and something will come across the screen like, Mike and Allie were fine and nothing bad happened to them. But if we die, is that a quit?
I think they just wouldn't include it on the show. Like, you'd just be completely, like, they wouldn't even talk about you. You would be photoshopped out of all the pictures and all that stuff. Because, you know, it's all a conspiracy theory, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, okay. So Can we, since we have a little bit of time, let's say we kept our hand on the page that said go to the south and investigate the noises, because that's what we all did that with Choose Your Own Adventure books, just in case it led to us getting a venomous snake bite. Can we go back to investigating those noises to the south? Because now I'm really intrigued by them.
Yeah, let's investigate the noises. Okay. You continue walking towards the noises and can see faint outlines of what appears to be Rick Devins and David Wright up ahead. You slowly start to crouch down so you can hear them speaking. And faintly, you hear,
I feel comfortable with you. I want to get with the big guys. Just kind of slip through.
Did they get dental work?
Shut up, Mike. You're having trouble making out the rest of their conversation. The only way you can really hear what they're talking about is to approach David and Devins. A, do you approach them to see what they're saying? Or David and Devins sound like they're having a personal moment and you don't want to barge in.
What do you think, Allie?
See, I just have to say, I really dislike Rick on the show. I'm sure he's a great guy, yada, yada. And like the way that people call like Trump 45 is like a sign of disrespect. Like, I will never call him by his last name. Like, he is Rick. So, which I'm already distracted by the question.
Okay.
Will you do like what Stacey Powell did to Coach and call him like Richard, not even given the service of calling him Rick?
Yeah, it's like what happens on the show, on the challenge, when they call Bananas John as like disrespect. Although you'd think Bananas would be the bigger disrespect, but like, I have real Rick issues, and I'm not going to start calling him that, he like his last name as he requested. I feel like everyone's giving him all this credit, like, oh, Jeff decided to call him by his last name, like he asked for that. So no, I will not.
Sorry, so
I won't even engage.
So should we not? We won't follow them then. We should. They seem like they're having a personal conversation, albeit without closing their mouths. We can move on.
Well, it's almost like the better thing to do would be to jump in and be like, "What? What do you need, Rick? Like, what's up, busted, Rick?"
Maybe you should.
All right, you know what? Let's do that and let's say those words exactly. What do you need, Rick? Busted, Rick.
What do you need?
Okay. Despite what might be sexual innuendos, you need to hear what David and Devins are saying. So you pop out from behind the bushes. What do you need, Rick? Whatever else Allie said. But David, notoriously fearful of loud noises, big movements, etc., is not pleased with you approaching them. Especially Rick. He was really pissed that you did not call him Devins like he specifically requested. Anyway, David and Rick were busy making a weird Final Four deal and thought you'd overheard everything, so they decide to target you instead. After losing the immunity challenge, David and Rick make it their mission to vote you out. You were voted out unceremoniously.
Wait, we didn't even get an option to, like, do better?
No. After Jeff snuffs your torch, you walk down the path and see a sign. Which path will you take? Hey. If you want a chance to get back in the game, take this torch and get on the boat. Or B, if you do not want to play anymore, follow this path and your adventure will end.
Oh, God.
I got enough of Rick. Let's end the adventure. No, I'm just kidding.
No! we gotta go see Reem.
Yeah, no, I'm totally kidding.
We're going to the left. To the left.
I need to know if Keith is there.
Okay. Cliffhanger! You're going to have to wait till next week. Second. Ha ha.
Can you tell us the best route in this game? Like, is there
I'm assuming it's you find the idol, right?
Yeah, you guys got close. So
was it going up the tree?
Yeah, if you go, hold on. I was like a million freaking things. Okay. Just like Tai Trang, you climb the tree, reach into one of the tree knots, and sure enough, an idol. Quickly, you hop down and shove the idol in your pants. Will you tell anyone about the idol? Will you use the idol to save a returning player? Will you use the idol to take out perpetually dancing Ron Clark, whose peppiness becomes grating? Tune in next week to find out.
Now I'm intrigued. Did any other options involve death?
Yes. Okay, so essentially what I did is, if you ever ignored idol hunting, you eventually died. So, for example, if you ignore the tree and you continue to walk, I wrote, you ignore the tree and continue down the path when all of a sudden the earth opens up in a giant sinkhole. I should have looked for the tree clearly containing an idol, especially considering this episode is entitled Idol Search Party. You whisper as the darkness of the earth consumes you for all eternity.
This is amazing.
Idol adventure ends here.
Bravo, Liana, bravo.
I don't know, would you rather have drowned or fallen through an open abyss in the earth?
I feel like getting medevaced by being poisoned, but dying
we
is the best.
Had, we like, the won least, this. The least of all evils there.
Yeah. Yeah.
We pretty much won.
Let's see. So the other one, so if you go, the other big one that you guys didn't end up going to is if you talk to Windy. So Big Windy pops out of the bushes and runs up to you. Hey, I know people are against me, but I just want to say that I'm an asset for you. Other people may say, let's target you, but not I. What do you think about working together to take out Wentworth? And then you can make some decisions about what you'd want to do with Wentworth. But let's say, for example, you say, oh, well, I should really go find my clothes that Reem put out, so I'll let you know. Then Windy would seem sad by your response. Okay, yeah, that's cool. Just remember when you vote me out to write Big Windy. I heard Propes really hates that. As quickly as Windy approached you, she sprints off into the jungle.
This is amazing.
She's definitely going home unless someone really sucks at that challenge, you say to yourself. Anyway, so, and then it continues. But
this was beautiful. I'm very impressed by this.
Congratulations. You guys died. You got medevaced. And eventually you
No, we did not die.
We did
I would
not.
Like
we,
to
we
say,
skirted death.
We escaped
we got
death.
But in another life, we made David Wright poop his pants and really bugged Rick Devins. And it does not make us winners in the end, according to Allie.
It really does. And who knows? You could be going to the edge, and you could end up coming back. I don't know. Tune in to find out. Okay, that's all I got. I guess congratulations or whatever.
Congratulations to you. That was beautiful.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I applaud your skills. That was a lot of fun. A fun journey to go on.
Yeah, I've got a fun little chart here because I started getting really confused. But we made it out in the end. So I just want to, there are six total endings that I wrote. Two of them die. Two of them you're voted out. One of them you get medevaced, and one of them you find the idol. So the odds were pretty low to begin with. I'm just like being successful.
You just like winning Survivor. There's a narrow path there, but you're able to navigate it sometimes. But I want to talk about something that's actually a bit tangential to Edge of Extinction, but I think still interesting. So I don't know if you guys read this article that Dalton Ross came out with this past week, but it was revealed that Sia's charitable donations to certain Survivor players did not stop with season 36. So this week, Davey Rickenbacker revealed that he got an email from somebody about a week after the reunion saying, "Hi, Davey, I really admired your spirit and was moved by your faith, and so I wanted to give you this gift. I'm sorry you didn't win. You were my choice to win. I love you. Keep going." Sort of sketchy, out of nowhere. But he checked with Jeff, and it turns out that was Sia, and he received $14,000.
That's 1,000% sounds like a scam. Like, okay, but before I transfer you the money, can you send me your bank account number and your social security number? That's what I expected to be the end of that email.
Oh my God. Allie, as someone who is, you know, studying to be a lawyer, how do you feel about the way that Sia approached Davey here in this method of this method of contact?
I mean, this has nothing to do with the question you asked me. I just like, I guess I shouldn't be upset that like people are getting money, but the way that Davey tweeted about this was like, I was selected as like the Sia player of the season.
It's a scholarship.
Like, it was just like, this isn't an official prize, and I don't want like Sia's $14,000 check to like impact how people play the game. I don't know why it bothers me. Like, this is not an official, like, it would bother me less if Sia like sponsored the fan favorite or something. It was like an actual vote, but it's just like Sia comes out of nowhere and is just like, based on the edit of Survivor, I'm going to give you the maximum amount I can give you that would be tax deductible. Like, I just don't understand this thing. Like, I get it that it was like exciting the first time, but now it's like, are people thinking about this when they're playing the game? Like, $14,000 is nothing to sneeze at. I don't know.
Well, to be fair, Davey did not play the game knowing, because remember, he was playing the game, you know, while season 36 was airing. So I don't think he knew that things were in the cards for Donathan to randomly get Sia money. So maybe this cast, it might be the thing.
But I mean, Ty had gotten the money.
Right, but that was like four seasons beforehand.
Fine.
So I have a few things. First of all, I'm excited for like 10 seasons from now when you get like a random DM on whatever the current social media is. So like Instabook, Vine, Instabook. Or whatever.
Oh, they're bringing Vine back?
Yeah, the merging of all of them. Like, it's just like, hey, you up, got money for you. X, see ya, you know? Like, that's how she decides to message people because, you know, like, really, an email? That's how you decided to contact Davey? Anyway, that was one thought. And then the other thought is, okay, so you know how big companies can buy our representatives because they just have so much money, and then that's how it works with the lobbyists and the whatnot. What if we did that, going off Allie's point of trying to buy a Survivor player? So, for example,
I don't know that that was my point. I just
no, Allie's totally right. Allie, we need to buy someone and put them on the show.
No, so what we do is we start our own prize. We can, you know, Allie, I'm sure you can draft up all of the legal jargon for all of this. And
I am not a lawyer. This is not my idea. Or what? I'm not enjoying this.
So what Allie said in literally her exact words was, let's raise a bunch of money and then give that money as a prize to the Survivor contestant that plays the way we want them to play.
I like this. Can it be Bitcoin?
Well, didn't that guy lose all the passwords to all of the Bitcoins, so no one can actually get their Bitcoin anymore?
I like that idea. We can't promise anyone. We don't really need to, you know, live up to our promises.
It's true. Okay, I like this plan. I think we should go forward. I don't know how we would want that person to play, you know, because it can't really be like America's player necessarily, because there's no real feedback loop.
Let's do this. Off of a term that we loved from our Ghost Island season, how about the BNB Bitcoin butt munch of the season, in which we determine who's the biggest butt munch and we give them the Bitcoin.
I like that. We still will probably have to define the criteria. I don't know if the casuals are the ones that define
Allie
the
will
criteria.
Do that. She can take care of that.
Ah, yes. Great. Okay. Thanks, Allie. Considering this was your idea, I really appreciate you doing that for us.
I did not choose to be a part of this narrative. I did not wish to be a part of this narrative since 2009, whatever the quote is.
This was not the adventure you chose. Yeah. Not my adventure.
No, I chose to get swallowed up by the fissure that opened up in the earth instead of forming a scheme to get a Survivor player sponsored for Bitcoin to act like a butt munch on national television.
Makes sense. It's a sinkhole.
Well, Rick's already the clear winner of this.
Yeah, it's Rick. Richard. Is that his full name?
Or I'm assuming Rick is short for Richard.
Okay.
So I guess the other question that I had to ask with that is, so do we think that there is, I mean, assuming if Sia makes this a recurring thing, to Allie's point, do we think there's someone who's in the lead right now to get that money, even though we're only two episodes in?
Was there reason or logic behind Davey getting the money? Like, I don't know what the criteria is.
Going back to her email, she said, "Hi, Davey, I really admired your spirit and was moved by your faith, and so I want to give you this gift. I'm sorry you didn't win. You were my choice to win. I love you. Keep going." So I guess the criteria is, A, didn't win.
Be a man.
B, you must be swift as a coursing river. B, have a good spirit. C, question mark, maybe not necessarily mandatory, but, you know, have some spirituality or faith.
Well, if Keith saves a chicken out on the edge, then, I mean, that's a done deal, right?
Reem's going to be so pissed if Keith saves a chicken on the edge. She's had, what, 3 bites of coconut in a week. And she's like, no, I must save her. You don't understand.
We can't eat the chicken. It's all about the sea of money.
Think about the long game, Reem.
Are the returners up for it, even though Sia has declined to give them the award in the past? Like, could she change her mind on someone like David Wright?
That's true. Joe is talked about, you know, meditating a lot and having, you know, I don't know if he said the word religion specifically, prayer and meditation, because he is at peace with life.
I don't know, guys. I feel like Ron Clark might be the leading contender here, because, again, if you're talking about spirit, he's the most spirited of the bunch.
He has so much spirit.
He's got 33 movements of spirit.
Allegedly.
That's too much spirit. I mean, at a certain point, it's like spirit overdose. So peppy. Stop it. Oh, goodness.
So we shall see. I guess, do we have a consensus pick right now, or do we feel like the field's still wide for who could possibly win this CEO award?
I mean, it's considering how arbitrary the award seems to be. I don't know that we could make like a reasonable pick.
Okay, I'm gonna go with no one gets it.
Ooh, that's a good. That's a you know, risky choice, but I could see that as well. Maybe she feels like I don't want this to be an every season thing, so I'm gonna abstain from it. I guess we'll see either come finale night or months after the case. Apparently, in this season.
Yeah.
Do you think it depends on how she's doing financially, like depending on whether she wants the return or not, like the write-off?
Yeah. I mean, let's see how the Sia tours are doing.
Or she doesn't get the write-off. I don't really understand taxes. It's just like he doesn't get taxed on it. I think she can write it off. But I don't know. Someone who like pays taxes at that level, please let me know.
Yeah, I've never had that much money to know about taxes at that. Well, because I think he doesn't pay taxes on it. Because it's a gift up to a certain amount, but I don't know.
I believe she might also be able to write it off. I don't know. Again, I don't get $14,000 gifts. I see if you're interested in teaching me about taxes, please feel free to gift me $14,000.
Here, Allie, go learn about taxes.
Who said the B&B wasn't educational? Us making up our own tax law.
I would do better than a lot of, or some, at least some Survivor winners allegedly have done with
that. That's very true. That's very true. No jail time for you.
Not gonna watch.
All right, let's finish things off with our question of the week. Last week's question of the week, pick one item, speaking of Ron Clark, to add to the Advantage menu. We'll go through all of your answers and read off some of ours as well to add to this ever-growing menu of advantages. First, Sir Mayans said, I would suggest a snakes and ratatouille advantage for the Advantage menu, where a snake will come out to eat all the rats on the island and hopefully not bite you and send you off medevac.
Do you get the snake when you go searching for the idol? Or I guess it's the Advantage menu, so you have to pick it. Oh my God, can you imagine? That's a choose your own adventure right there. There's three options. What if one results in finding the idol, one results in death, and one results in a medevac? Can you imagine? Poor Ron Clark.
Well, I feel like stealing the reward might involve death because I feel like he'll get jumped by the other tribe if he actually does steal the reward from them.
Yeah, I'll come up with my own fanfic about what would happen at the Advantage menu in our Choose Your Own Adventure story.
See, now we can have our own fan fiction corner brought over from the Big Brother podcast just with your own fan fiction.
That's right. I have a lot of creativity. I may not be a baboon, but as a lion, sometimes I still feel like I have creativity. I need to channel it somewhere.
Next up, Jonathan Troyer, actually staying on the same ratatouille pun line. It says, my addition to the Survivor Advantage menu would be rat out to ye. If used, you would learn the name of a tribe mate who said in a confessional that they are targeting you.
Oh, that would actually be a really interesting Survivor Advantage. Like, essentially, you're gaining information. Do you have to pick? Oh, okay. You will learn the name of a tribe mate said in a confessional they are targeting you.
So basically, you get to watch the dailies, I suppose, the Ream dailies, and say like, Kelly said they were going to target you. So good luck with that information.
Oh, it's very Big Brother.
All right. More like Big Brother Canada in terms of just when you don't realize that what you're saying to the cameras is being shown to other people. Dan Sinensky, veal a stoat. You can steal someone's vote at tribal council. You can also eat calf and weasel.
Oh, I get it. I was a little confused at first, but then I saw switched the words there or the letters or whatnot. And I get it. I get it.
Adam Goldman says on the menu is a steak shish kebab on an effing stick that has a face on it that has matured into a real idol. Warning, consuming this could lead to a medical evacuation from the game or from Ponderosa.
Is that a risk you'd be willing to take? That should be the next Ghost Island wager. It's like, okay, you get to eat this meat on a stick. It could be an idol underneath, but you might get medevaced.
You know, that could be something interesting, actually, if they ever brought back like the gross food challenge. Like, imagine in Survivor Marquesas that they had idols back then. Okay, Boss and Rob, at the bottom of this plate of Fafaru is an idol clue. Let's see if you can eat stomach enough to actually get to it.
Gross.
Again, another subtitle of the B&B, possibly. John says, a drink served on the Advantage menu is an option of the Juicy Juice Jury Removal, the Eggnog Extra Vote, and the Long Island Legacy Iced Tea.
Oh, man. The Long Island Legacy Iced Tea, that would be, like, a lot of bad decisions.
Yeah, yep, exactly. Considering that, like, yeah, you'd make a bad decision, but it would inform the next person who drinks the Long Island Legacy Iced Tea will also be making bad decisions. It's just a chain that continues.
Yeah, go Gotta break the cycle.
The Melissa bot has a few items to throw on there, albeit not necessarily punny, but certainly interesting. Lyrsa's jacket, Natalie's jacket, Angelina's jacket, release Reem to mess with everyone's clothes Pokemon style. I don't know what that means. Or you can have a strategy session with either Debbie, Cochran, Fishback, or Nick Majorano.
I like release Reem. I also don't know what that means, but I'm very much here for it. Like when Rachel came back into the house and Big Brother just to mess with everybody. That's what I want for Reem. If she has to leave the edge for some reason, that's what they can do.
Well, like bring her back to the game for one last chance at revenge, at yeah. Reemvenge.
Well, yeah, her Reemvenge, and then she would just go around annoying everybody.
Parker Schimler says, just like Debbie got to speak to Cochran, I propose to you the sloppy Joe Anglum.
Can you explain that one, Mike?
No.
Okay. Because that could mean something else, but... So my parents, or my mom specifically, she would give me a big wet kiss and she would go, it's a sloppy Joe. Is that a thing? Or is that just
your
mom?
Is your mom named Joe? So your mom just kissed you and called you sloppy Joe?
Yeah.
Feel free to borrow that one, Mike. I'm sure Liana's mom would
admire. Come here, see comes the sloppy Joe.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cute.
As we take breaks from playing our Wii Survivor game, if whether he wins or loses the challenges, he'll get a sloppy Joe no matter what. That's the reward.
That's the Sia reward. Get a sloppy Joe.
Oh, boy.
Finally, John Tinkham says, my idea for the advantage menu is to steal a reward for your entire tribe and go to Big Tom's Cheese and T-Birder Burger Barge. You'll be treated to a classic burger and hot tea meal served by Big Tom and T-Bird of Survivor Africa fame. Will all be served to you while floating on a barge in the ocean, because why not? I understand that the T-Bird of it all. I'm a bit confused about why Big Tom's in there.
Big Tom's Cheese Burger.
I guess he did. Well, he did when he was asked what he missed most in Africa. He did say cheeseburger, so I guess that does make sense.
Yeah. Oh my god. If they don't remember that David is a returning player, can you imagine if Big Tom or T-Bird came back out there? Totally under the radar.
That's very true. All right. Let's see what we have to add to the menu as well as de facto chefs here. Allie, what do you have?
So I felt like I misunderstood the question because I just took existing advantages and put them into food puns. So while we were talking, I came up with a new one also that would be a new advantage. So I do have two.
All right. Something old, something new. Give it to us.
Yeah. So the old one is in like the style of a state fair, like a turkey legacy advantage prepared in an idle nullifier.
Ooh, that does sound good.
Oh, and
is like mine, but better. So, yeah, mine was the chicken leg a sea advantage. Damn. All right.
And then I have a suggestion of a re-apple turning over player goes back to their Old Bay seasoning. So you just get to pick the returning player to leave.
To go back to their Old Bay seasoning.
So when you put Old Bay seasoning in apple turnovers, I don't know how to cook.
It's just you know.
Okay. I went the breakfast route. I went for extra vote meal with dulce de leche and deviled legacy advantages.
Oh my god, y'all just
wait. What was the dulce de leche one?
It was dulce de leche.
Beautiful.
Man. All right, so for next week, we talked about Ron Clark and his 33 movements. Let's see if we can all put on our best Travis Wall hats and add another movement to that. What is one dance move you would want to bring to Survivor? Probably going to be a currently existing one, unless you want to describe to us or, hell, videotape yourself doing the dance. Why not? We'll accept those submissions. Feel free to send us all your dance moves, and we will compile them next week as we talk with, I'm super excited for this, the first lady of podcasting herself, Nicole Cesternino.
Wow.
Will be stopping by the B&B to make an appearance to talk about episode 3.
Can we say, Liana, because I know the last time the first lady of podcasting was on with Rob tried to demote her to like the first lady of RHAP to not step on other female podcasters. I'm okay as a female podcaster, not to represent all female podcasters, with Nicole being the first lady of podcasting. And I know that I'm not the female podcaster that Rob would have been worried about, but for whatever my blessings were, she has it.
Yeah, I also don't really care, to be honest. I didn't even think about it until he said that. And then I was like, I don't care. So yeah, first, we will continue to call her the first lady of podcasting. It feels apropos.
So if you have any dance move suggestions that you want to send to us, and whatever title you want to deem Nicole Cesternino, you can always reach out to us using the hashtag RHAPBNB. You can always email us, RHAPBNB@gmail.com. That's where we also get any game suggestions as well. You can talk about it on the Reddit. Now I'm putting the in front of everything. Thank you, Allie. The Facebook, the comments section on the RHAP website. We have a bunch of ears and eyes and other body parts, according to Liana, out there to receive them all. And I can't wait to talk about them next week with Nicole. Allie, thank you so much for coming on and showing how much of a baboon you can be gloriously on the B&B this episode before the ocean swallows us up into the darkness. How can people follow you on social media, and what have you been up to with this season of The Challenge?
Yeah, as always, it was absolutely my pleasure. I love talking to you guys. Thank you for doing this late on a Friday night for my travel schedule. You could follow me at Lash Tweets. And what am I doing? I don't know. We're podcasting about The Challenge. It's been a great season. Challenge War of the Worlds, season 34? Season 33. And it's been great. It's a whole mishmash of players from all over the world, all over the reality TV universe. We had Bachelor US and Canada. We have Survivor Turkey. We have Big Brother. We have Road Rules Real World. We have Are You the One? And then all of the UK properties. It's been a blast. So come check us out at robiswebsite.com/challenge iTunes.
Yeah, I do want to say this might be one of my favorite starts to a challenge season ever. And you and Brian have done such a great job of covering it. I will admit, without going into too many spoilers, but I guess to bring it back to Survivor, it's a bit Survivor Game Changers for me. In terms of talk about spoilers for the next little bit or so, the big names going home early. So hopefully the end of the season will, you know, play better than at least the back half of Game Changers did. But it's been so much fun so far.
Yeah, I think this is definitely intentionally a season to try to get the new future of the challenge to sort of stand on its own. And I think also unintentionally, they've been set up well where, as you said, the big names have gone home. So it will be a nice like look into the next, I don't know, five seasons of the challenge if we make it that far, which I think we will. The ratings have been up. So it is a peek into the future of the challenge. So if you haven't watched before, it's a good time to get on board. You will not have missed much.
Right. And it's back on track with actually ending the episode with an elimination.
Yes.
Which I know seems crazy to ask for, but I'm very thankful.
As Survivor becomes one full big season of a cliffhanger, not even just this episode, the entire season is just a cliffhanger. The challenge somehow gets its act together. So we're having some closure week to week, which is a nice change.
All right, Liana, what about you?
Yes. You can find me on social media at Liana Boras, LianaBoraas. And of course, in addition to doing the B&B, Mike, you and I are talking with Brent Wolgamott about everything RuPaul's Drag Race. So we just had the first episode of season 11 air this week. So we'll be talking about that later. That should be coming out soon. Yeah, I know, girl. Oh, girl.
Yeah, Allie, before, just very quickly, because I'm sure we'll have you on over the course of this season, but do you have any quick thoughts about the premiere of Drag Race?
Are you sure? Because I never get the invite anymore. I think I was on once, but I love listening. That's the real bonus of not having being on the podcast, is I get to listen to it. It's amazing. I don't know how you guys do it with the back-to-back seasons. I don't want to say anything until I hear you guys in my earbuds, but I'm pumped for this season. I'm pumped for the new queens. I'm pumped for Miss Silky. I think it's going to be a wild ride.
And you can always follow me at a Mike Bloom type. You can check out the Top Chef coverage we're doing here on Reality TV or Hap Ups and with Parade Magazine as well. I'm covering Star Trek for THR and for post-show recaps. A lot of stuff out there, so be sure to check it all out, as well as all the great stuff that Ali and Liana are doing, too. That's going to do it for this week on the B&B. Again, feel free to let us know your thoughts about these games, if you have any game suggestions or dance moves that you want to bring to the table. We'll talk about them next week with Nicole Cesternino. Special thanks to Will from America for our kick-ass theme song, as Ali lauded, understandably, beforehand. Scott St. Pierre for editing this behind the scenes, and Paul Osselson for head writing and producing that Survivor by the Numbers game that got everyone just a little bit confused, but in the best way possible. Ali, Liana, thank you so much. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll check you out at your next stay.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I...